It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into the FFSN NFL Draft Show. My name is Jeremy Betts, joined by my good buddy Andrew Wilbar. And guess what? We're not speculating anymore, ladies and gentlemen. We are recapping. This isn't a preview. This is a recap. Andrew, the first round is in the books, and it was crazy, as always. Not as crazy as maybe we thought it might be, but still a lot went down. How you doing after round one?
Not doing too bad. I was humbled a little bit. You did get more correct than what I did. And our first round's the mocks. I do have six more rounds to catch up. That's but true. At the end of the day, kudos to you. You got 10 right, which is the goal that I always set every year. People don't understand it. For a mock draft, to get 10 right in a mock draft, that's pretty good. That is you got a pretty solid mock going. And if you get at least 25 players correct in the first round that are going in the first round, that's a good mock. And then we both had 28. So yeah. Kudos to you for that draft. That was a really good mock draft, and I was wanting to critique it this morning. I'm like, oh, that's definitely not going to happen. And then like every single trade I mocked did not happen. In that aspect, I'll take an L, but it was an interesting round, and we're going to discuss some of that over the next half hour.
We are, and I just think that my biggest takeaway from this was kind of based on the getting 28 players correct in the mock draft is that we kind of knew who the first round guys were, and it didn't vary too much from that conversation and the speculation on that until the very, very end, Andrew. And there were some players like Cooper DeJean that did not go in the first round that were interesting. Kulyan McKinstry, the cornerbacks strangely devalued, Andrew, in this draft in the first round. We can talk about that a little bit more later. But also when you look at some of the earlier picks too, the lack of trades was very intriguing. And then kind of weird trades. There were two trades, Andrew, in this first round that were just, you moved up one spot to get the guy that you wanted. You had the Vikings doing that from 11 to 10 to get J.J. McCarthy. And then you had the Panthers going from 33 just outside the first round to 32 with the Bills to get that pick in the first round. So interesting trades, and nobody really did a blockbuster big time trade where you had multiple high end assets moving down the board. I think that maybe the most shocking trade was that the Bills actually let Kansas City jump up and take a wide receiver in their place from 32 to 28. But let's do this, Andrew. Let's start out with some winners and losers in this draft class or in this draft so far in the first round. Give us something positive to start out with here. What team do you have as your first winner of the night? And then we'll kind of just converse through it the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, when you were talking about winners and losers, I think on a positive note, something that stood out to me tonight was the Philadelphia Eagles. You're looking at pick 22, getting a guy that was a top 10 player on the board, guy had a top 10 grade, falls all the way to 22. We were talking, and you and I both had a mock trade in our mock drafts of him, of Philly going up to 12 to go and get Quinion Mitchell, and falls all the way to 22. Absolutely incredible value. I remember last year we were just talking about this, about Nolan Smith. The Eagles have found ways to get value, and somehow the board always falls to where they can get the best player available, matches up with their positions of need. And the Eagles were smart not to bite and not to try to make the move up. They got the player to fall to them, and it just goes to show again this year how so many rumors are just flat out wrong. They're just flat out wrong. The information we got, the both the Steelers and the Eagles were trying to trade up to 12 for a corner. Well, that couldn't have been true because the Steelers had a chance to get that corner at 20 and they passed up on him. So that just goes to show that you can't believe everything you hear. But smart pick by the Eagles. Absolutely love that. And I know, Jeremy, you like Quinion Mitchell as well.
I do. And I thought that the Eagles had to be thrilled that they get him there at 22 without having to trade assets to move up, without having to finagle the board. It was very shocking to me that it ended up playing out that way, because I thought Quinion Mitchell's, like, the ceiling for where he could go was 8 to the Falcons, and then like the floor was about Jacksonville at 17, and he's there at 22. That was absolutely shocking to me. So great value there. I'm going to go chalk here with my first winner, Andrew. And to me, it's the Bears. You land a guy in Caleb Williams that, for outside of a few people, and I know you're one of those people that doesn't consider him as maybe the slam dunk prospect that many would. This is the guy who, the expectation is he comes in and turns the Bears franchise around. And so you got him at pick 1. There was no conversation any other direction. But then you stick at 9 and you get a lot of people's favorite wide receiver in the entire draft, in Rome Odunze. This offense is fire. It's awesome when you look at the pieces that they have there. And they need to do some more work on the offensive line, probably. They definitely need to do some work on defense. But if you're going to fix one side of the ball, this is a great start for that. I love that Chicago was able to get Odunze there at 9. That really rounded that out for them, for me. And I think that they're a big winner in this draft.
Oh, I agree with that. And as much as I like picks, you get a premier wide receiver prospect. And the drop-off was significant after that at wide receiver. Yes, there's a lot of really good receivers. But even though I wasn't necessarily the biggest Rome Odunze fan, even I would tell you that he was one of the top three guys on that tier. Marvin Harrison was on his own tier. I would have still put Odunze on that same tier as Neighbors, although I did have Neighbors a few slots higher on the big board. Actually, I only had him one spot higher, but the grade I was still a little different. Still higher grade on Neighbors, but great pick at pick 9. They won't have a whole lot else to work with unless they try to make some trades over the next couple days. But at least they are set on the offensive side of the football. They could use another pass rusher. Maybe they trade into day 2 tomorrow. I think that they could very well do that. Just because they may try to go in all in this year, knowing that they both the GM and the coach is probably on the hot seat. But I agree with you. Great first round by Chicago. I want to throw another team at you, and that's the Minnesota Vikings. Yeah. And how they were able to – we were talking, and I bit the rumors. I thought, sure, either 4 or 5, the Minnesota Vikings are trading up to get their guy, J.J. McCarthy. I thought it was Drake May. I thought New England would take J.J. McCarthy. I was wrong. Regardless, McCarthy is the next guy available. Okay, they're going to move up and get McCarthy. Pick 5 comes in. Nobody trades there. I'm like, man, I thought sure that Jim Harbaugh would want to move out of there. And Minnesota's like, oh, we're not going to buy all this hype about the Giants potentially taking them. They did the same thing last year, and they do the same thing every year. They always do it, and they end up taking a chalk player like Malik Neighbors.
Yep.
The Giants are good at lying. And they've done that the last 2 years. So I think that they kind of knew what was going to happen. And they're like, okay, well, we'll move up one spot here. After that, we knew the Bears weren't going to take one. Odunze fell to them, so that kind of caps their ability to trade back. Well, we can move up one spot, at least just to secure our guy. Smart move. And then that still gave them the ammo to move up and get who many people had pegged as the number one defender in the entire draft. He was my number two defender in the draft. And Dallas Turner, while he's not a perfect scheme fit, he's a great athlete, and they're going to find a way to use him. Obviously, they already brought in Jonathan Greenard this offseason. They brought in Van Ginkle. Minnesota's still going to have a good pass rush, regardless of what the rest of their defense is. They've got a solid pass rush. That's going to be big for them going forward. Big win for the Minnesota Vikings tonight.
Loved that they got Turner at 17. That was a big deal. I think the fact that they took him at 17 and he's only the third defender off the board, Andrew, that's incredible to me that we had a run of 14 straight offensive players in this draft. And let's get into the quarterback talk a little bit here, because I think I think you cannot hate what any of the first three teams did in this draft, with Caleb Williams taking, or I'm sorry, the Chicago Bears taking Caleb Williams first overall. The Commanders taking Jaden Daniels made a ton of sense. This is a Heisman Trophy winner. This is your number one quarterback on your board. And then the Patriots going with Drake May. So much upside in Drake May. It's not a good team in New England, but maybe you've got the quarterback to make it easier to figure it out. But then, Andrew, what are we doing? If you're the Atlanta Falcons at 8, what are you doing taking Michael Penix Jr. without even telling the guy you just paid $100 million guaranteed to in Kirk Cousins? That's not looking good right there. And then, I mean, where do you even begin with this selection for the Atlanta Falcons and their new head coach, Raheem Morris, new offensive coordinator? This to me was the biggest bugaboo of the first round. It just doesn't make sense to me.
If you are a Falcons fan, unless you believe that this guy is somehow Michael Vick reincarnated, which I don't think he is, this could go down.
That speed, first of all,
not just this year, this could go down as one of the dumbest selections that we've seen in several years. This pick makes absolutely no sense. Kirk Cousins didn't even know about this, Jeremy. He did not even know. I don't think anyone knew. There had to have been whispers around the league. The way that it was reported, I was watching the ESPN broadcast when this happened. And Adam Schefter, before the pick was even in, he then broke the news. So something tells me that he knew something ahead of time, but was told, hey, don't spread this. Don't say this. You can't report this. We're keeping it confidential. Can't say anything until we're on the clock. Because he, all of a sudden, you can't just say that there's absolutely no buzz. You can search the internet, Jeremy. I don't think you would have found one mock draft that would have had Atlanta taking a quarterback, let alone Michael Penix Jr. over J.J. McCarthy. This makes
Let alone at 8, where they were picking originally. That does, it's just eight. Mind-boggling.
All I can figure is that there's something that this nostalgia of Michael Vick or something, that they're like, we think Michael Penix can be this thing with the left hand and the mobility, and he can do all this, that, and the other. Why would you do this? You just spent over $150 million on Kirk Cousins in free agency. Yeah. This makes no sense. And they talking after the draft, well, this isn't immediately. Kirk's our quarterback. This is for the future. Michael Penix is no spring chicken.
No.
He's not a younger prospect. Are you going to wait until he's 30 years old to start him? Are you going to trade Kirk Cousins? This is an outrageous, outrageous pick. And this is not to hate on Michael Penix. Michael Penix has a lot of upside, and he is a great guy. I'm not trying to make this is a special night for Michael Penix, and I hate that we have to talk about it in this light.
Yeah.
Because this should be a positive night for Michael Penix. He went higher. Good for him. I hope that he has a great career. But Atlanta, this makes absolutely no sense from a practical perspective, from a just a team business perspective. None of this makes sense. Everyone's going to bash the Atlanta Falcons, and quite honestly, they deserve it after tonight. We may look back and say, you know, wow, they really knew what they were doing there. This makes no sense unless there is something that they see in Kirk Cousins' health. I know there's been talks he may not be ready to start the regular season. What happens, Jeremy, if Michael Penix starts off the year really hot?
Yeah.
What do you do? Are you going to have someone trade for Kirk Cousins right after you just re-signed him and take on that heavy cap hit? Then you're stuck. Now you have drama. That's the last thing you want for a new head coach that's coming in, whose first opportunity did not go so well when he had his previous opportunity. This is not the situation you want to feed and put yourself into. I cannot believe the selection was made. There were a couple teams that were losers tonight. Atlanta was by far the biggest loser.
They were. I mean, you can't even explain this as, okay, Raheem Morris and Mike LaFleur, Matt LaFleur, probably very good friends. They worked together in Washington all those years ago, part of the McVay tree of people here. There's no way, there's no way that they looked at this and said, this is our Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers situation. Because first of all, Jordan Love was a 21-year-old coming out of college with all this upside and arm talent. Michael Penix Jr. has upside and arm talent for days, but if you're the Falcons, you're not even putting yourself in a position to have a rookie quarterback pay scale timeline, because you're paying Kirk Cousins superstar money. And if Michael Penix works out, you're going to pay him superstar money the very next contract. You don't ever get the rookie pay scale break. And so from that building perspective, it doesn't make sense. You decline to add help on defense where you really need some help, a pass rusher. You need a pass rusher if you're the Falcons. You need another corner if you're the Falcons. Heck, you could use another receiver if you're the Falcons. You pass up all of that at a premium draft slot to take a guy that until a week ago was consensus second round pick, Andrew, before the rumors started spreading that teams were actually higher on this guy than we thought. It's mind-boggling. We could talk about this all night, but let's move on to a couple other winners and losers real quick. Just rapid fire off some, Andrew, winners and a couple losers maybe that you've got here.
Yeah. One other winner I would mention is the Detroit Lions moving up to get Terrion Arnold. That was a great pick for them. Pair him with Carlton Davis. That's a really good match for them on the outside after having lost Cameron Sutton. On the loser side, one other team I had was the Denver Broncos, a team that Bo Nix was 76th on our FFSN draft board, Jeremy. And I do not apologize for putting him that low on the board in my rankings, because his upside is somewhat limited. You remember Kenny Pickett? I wouldn't say that he's got more upside than what Kenny Pickett had coming out. He's played a lot of football. I think this is a good system fit for him. But to take him 12th overall, I know that there were other. Maybe the fact Michael Penix went ahead to a team that didn't need a quarterback may have thrown a wrench into this too, because that's even one extra team. Now you've got the Raiders in your own division that could take him. And if this is a guy you like, you don't want to give the Raiders an opportunity. But in an ideal situation, you're at least trading back from 12 and then getting this guy, because you got to know, Denver, that even if you pass on it this year, even if the Broncos are bad this year, I don't think Denver would immediately fire Sean Payton with the current quarterback situation. I think they'd give him another year. So you could wait until next year's draft to address it. You don't have to force a Bo Nix this year unless you're completely sold he's the guy. I understand the concept of if you're sold on a quarterback, you take him. But I can't justify taking the 76th overall player in the draft in my eyes, 12th overall. I just can't.
And I think the highest most people had him was in the second round. And so even still, that is the reach of the first round, in my opinion.
Yes.
I mean, Michael Penix kind of falls in that category too, but he at least has some elite
traits of greatness.
Yeah, exactly. And Bo Nix is kind of just okay at a bunch of different things. And so that might work in a Sean Payton offense. We'll see. But isn't Bo Nix Russell Wilson at his best? Isn't that who he is, Andrew?
I don't even think he has the knack for making off-scripted plays like Russell Wilson has. Bo Nix is very much more scripted, methodical, inside the pocket, get rid of the ball quickly, which maybe that Sean Payton sees Drew Brees in him. I never saw Drew Brees when I watched him, but that could be just me. He's displayed more consistency, but was not in necessarily a pro style offense. He has played in pro style offenses before, but we need to see more consistency develop in that area. And he's going to be playing against much better defenses overall. Let's see how his efficiency is going into the NFL in year one. He's going to compete with Jarrett Stidham. But if you're talking about NFL readiness, if you're talking about readiness in general, he's 24 years old. He's played a lot of football. Yeah. If he's not ready now to start, he's probably never going to be. So I would expect him to start week one for the Denver Broncos.
And he is an upgrade on what they have. I think you can make that argument too. So I've got one more winner that I like to mention, and then I've got two losers. I'm going to label the Jacksonville Jaguars as a winner, trading back to 23, still landing Brian Thomas Jr. For an offense that is sorely lacking a big play threat. This is a great pick for them at 23, gaining some extra picks in the process. Makes a lot of sense to me. And then the Buffalo Bills, Andrew, very strange draft for them. There was so much talk that they'd be trading up for a receiver. They didn't do that. Instead, they trade back twice and don't even pick in the first round. and let, in the process, let's count them up, 1, 2, 3 receivers go ahead of them where they were originally picking at 28, including the Chiefs, of all teams, trading up and taking Tyreek Hill 2.0 to put in that offense again. So that was strange to me. And then I'm going to throw the Ravens under the bus here a little bit. Khalil McKinstry still on the board. Cooper DeJean still on the board. And they picked Nate Wiggins, who was much further down the rankings on my personal board. I just don't like that fit. I don't like that pick. Nate Wiggins, great person, great effort player, a lot of speed, but the size concerns are real, and his ability to hold up at the NFL level is real. So those would be my two losers in the back end of the first round. Andrew, anything else that surprised you? Let's move on from the winners and losers conversation. Any picks that surprised you, or it could be in a good way, it could be in a bad way, anything that surprised you in the first round?
I would say that the Raiders were definitely surprised with Brock Bowers. I would have never imagined that just 1 year after taking Michael Mayer. That I did not see that happening. But if you're talking about a guy who is arguably the best player available, I mean, if you're going true BPA and you're a Raiders team that has a lot of needs, I can see why you would do that. I think that there's other positions they should have looked at, specifically in the secondary when you had those corners there. I know they went a little bit later on, but still, I would have considered that good value for a guy like Quinion Mitchell there. Would have made a lot of sense for them and what they needed, although I did have a higher grade on Bowers. But with Bowers, you're looking at him as a weapon, not just a tight end. And that has to be what they're looking at here. Outside of Devontae Adams and Michael Mayer, the Raiders don't have that many weapons. And once those quarterbacks are gone, maybe if Penix was there, they were going to take him. But that may have thrown everything off in their draft plans. And if that was truly the case, the next best thing you can do if you can't get your quarterback is to find ways to help the current one you have.
Yep.
But they also passed up on some good offensive linemen too. And that's my biggest concern. Their offensive line was a train wreck last year. They've got to improve up front. Fortunately, there's still some good guys available, but the pickings are going to slim up very fast tomorrow. We saw, 8 tackles go tonight? Something like that.
Yeah, 9 offensive linemen overall, which is the most since 2013.
Yeah.
14 offensive players go in the first 14 picks. That's in a row to start this draft. Crazy.
That's absolutely incredible. But the Raiders, I don't hate the Brock Bowers selection in general. I just didn't see it happening, and I'm concerned about some of the things that they passed up on at other positions of need because of it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a surprise to me. Let me just label this now. This is my panic pick of the first round, and it's the Miami Dolphins at 21 taking Chop Robinson. I don't hate the pick, but I really think they wanted Troy Fa'utanu, who went a pick before to the Steelers. And when he was off the board, they were like, oh, we got to go to plan B here. Pass rusher, Chop Robinson. Let's do that. That's kind of my feel for that pick. I may be totally wrong on that, but it just kind of felt that way. scheme wise, he makes sense for the Dolphins. Also, this is a coaching staff that loves speed and athleticism. On offense, why doesn't that translate over to defense too? It should, and it does here in this case. So it makes sense, but it did feel a little bit like, ooh, our guy's gone. What's plan B? Let's do that. So that was kind of my surprise there. I also thought Ricky Pearsall at 31 is a surprise. A guy many had going late day two, even as late as round three. But the Niners take Pearsall, and there are rumors after this pick, Andrew, that it's not Brandon Ayuk that the 49ers are trying to trade. It's Deebo Samuel that the 49ers are trying to trade, and that could make sense. Ricky Pearsall projects as a slot guy, good hands, can work after the catch, good route runner. Deebo Samuel's their slot weapon. That makes a little bit of sense. Did you have any thoughts on Ricky Pearsall, and did you have any other surprise picks?
I love Ricky. I had a second round grade on him, but I don't argue with their selection of him at this spot. He's a good football player. He hustles. He goes up at the catch point, catches. He's great in contested catch situations. He's tough. He's physical for a guy his size. He goes up and gets it, and he's a solid route runner too. Really like him. He had the catch of the year this past year in college. I there's a lot of things I like about Ricky Pearsall. Now, as it pertains to Deebo Samuel, my concern is that he does so many things for that offense. Like Ricky Pearsall, yes, he can play in the slot, but Deebo Samuel is more than just a slot. He aligns as a running back for them. He does so many different things in that offense. I understand there's injury concerns. I understand that he's not necessarily a cheap player to retain, but that would concern me some with San Francisco, just because Ricky, as much as many good things as he can do, he's not Deebo Samuel. And so unless they're taking a guy like Malachi Corley, who I believe is a good comp to Deebo Samuel, unless they plan on taking him as well, I don't know if they're going to find an exact guy to replace Deebo Samuel. It's just not one of those guys you can just, oh, we got another slot receiver, we can replace him. So if that's their plans, I don't know if I totally agree with it. But nonetheless, we'll see what they get if they do decide to move on from one of the receivers. But it was a surprise pick. I didn't see that happening, but I don't hate that. One thing about the Bills, Jeremy.
Yeah.
You mentioned about the fact that they had tried to, they end up trading back a couple times, losing on receivers. Doesn't this almost feel as if a guy like Keon Coleman is the guy that they've been targeting all along? They knew that, he ran the 4.6. He's not going to go in the first round. Teams aren't going to take him that high, but we still like him. We know we can get him later, so we're going to get picks again. We'll let Xavier Worthy go off the board. We'll let Xavier Legette go off the board because we know we can get our guy Keon Coleman. I'm not saying that couldn't be Adonai Mitchell, but I don't think they would have risked it if that was their guy going forward. But Keon Coleman's that guy who's kind of flew off the radar in that first round for a while. I still put him in Mock 5.0 because I thought it was possible. But doesn't it just seem like Keon Coleman might be that guy that they're actually targeting?
It does. He fits the profile of what they need. And I think the combine performance lowered his stock more than it should have based on the tape. Now, he's not a perfect wide receiver by any stretch, so don't get me wrong there. But I do think he could be the target for them. And they have the first pick of the second round. Maybe they trade out again. Who knows? That's definitely a possibility. One more surprise to me was Jordan Morgan to the Packers, with Graham Barton still on the board, with some pass rushers still on the board. Even with Tyler Guyton still on the board, they could have used a developmental tackle to put him behind some of the guys that they have there. And I thought Guyton had more upside than Morgan. So going with Morgan over Guyton was an interesting choice. I guess they view him as a little more pro ready, maybe a little bit more position flexible is why you do that. But it was a little bit of a surprise to me there. Any final thoughts on round one before we get into some ideas and thoughts for rounds two and three, excuse me.
I don't. Falcons are idiots. Move on.
How can the Falcons redeem themselves will be the talk of day two. They have a lot of picks, though. That is one thing to consider.
You can't redeem yourself.
They should just go home, right? This should be the end of it.
Just give your pick star Steelers and we'll take them.
Can you fire Terry Fontenot right now and be okay with that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I could live with that. So, okay, so round or day two, Andrew. Let's go ahead, look at the big board. Tell me who the best players available are on the FFSN big board that you put together, along with some scouting reports that a bunch of us helped with. But who's best available, and any thoughts for how you could see the market developing in the early portion of round two?
Yeah, make sure you can go and check that out, fansfirstsports.com. It came out Thursday afternoon. You can go back and check it out. I also put in a link in there for printable version of the rankings as well, so you can print them off, have them as something to keep track of, as you're watching the draft. But the top player available on the big board that I've got is Cooper DeJean at 22. You got Braden Fisk at 23. And I also have Adonai Mitchell. Those are the only three guys remaining on the board that I have first round grades on of any sort. They were all late firsts. So all the mid firsts, all the early firsts, like you talked about earlier, Jeremy, we kind of knew who those guys were, and the league felt very confident in that. So those guys are off the board. That, because of that, like you mentioned, potential movement. I don't think we see as much movement as most years. Usually we see a bunch of movement in those first couple picks in the second round, because teams have had time to reflect, reset their draft board, and look, okay, this is the guy we really need to go and get. And I'm not saying you won't see any trades, but I'm not expecting any blockbuster trades at the start. There is no Will Levis for some team to go up and get this year. There's no Joey Porter Jr. that's going to be calling the Pittsburgh Steelers and saying, hey, you know, we want to move up and get this guy. There's no guy that's just there that nobody expected to be available. I think we all expected DeJean to be gone, but it's not like we saw scenarios where it was possible he could
it's
still fall.
It's not egregious. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So I don't think there's anyone that's going to be a dire need of a trade up. I would say if there's someone who wants to move up for one of the remaining tackles, Kingsley Suamataia, he's 29th on the FFSN big board. I could see a team potentially moving up for him because the tackle market's drying up pretty quick. After that, Mikey Sanderstill, those are the top five guys. Sanderstill's up there too. I wouldn't rule out the Chargers with the Michigan connection. I imagine the Chargers are going to come away with at least one, maybe more Michigan players. And tomorrow, by the time tomorrow is done, Sanderstill's a guy to keep an eye on. And the remaining guys, just the remaining guys inside the top 40, Ladd McConkey, Zach Frazier, Keon Coleman, Junior Colson, Edgren Cooper, Cedric Van Praan, Malachi Corley, and Kool-Aid McKinstry, all still available. There's a lot of receivers. Surprisingly, there's still a decent bit of defensive backs, which I didn't think we were going to be saying coming out of night one. There's still options there, and I think you're going to see a run on both pretty early in round two.
I agree. Some teams to watch, I think, are the Commanders with two picks in the top seven of the second round. The Packers have two picks in the second round as well. And then I think a team like the Steelers with three picks on day two, they could do a lot of maneuvering. They did go get a tackle in round one. They have a desperate need at center. They could probably get a wide receiver in this draft class as well. It makes sense that they would be on the move potentially. The Texans were trying, Andrew, to move into round one. They couldn't get it done. They've got two second round picks. And then I look at the Bills, who didn't do anything on day one. And the Browns didn't do anything on day one. So those are two teams to watch. What are their first picks of the draft coming here in the second round? Day two is going to be exciting. Andrew, are you watching anybody else specifically for what they're looking to do?
I'm just curious in general for the league to see when the first running back comes off the board. Yes. I think you're looking at the second half of that second round, beginning of the third round, you're going to see running backs, Jonathan Brooks, Marshawn Lloyd, Trey Benson, Blake Corum, Jalen Wright. I think all those guys you're going to see off the board tomorrow. There's going to be a run on running backs. I say by the time we get to pick 80, running back market is dried up as well because there's some teams that could still use an upgrade. I think of the New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys could both use one. I wouldn't even rule out the Houston Texans as well. They obviously have Joe Mixon, but that doesn't preclude them from drafting one early on. And they're a team that doesn't have a bunch of needs. They have several picks. Obviously, defensive tackle is a son, Johnny Newton, still available, as well as corner. Texans could look that area, but I wouldn't rule out running back for them either. But day two is always fun because you got a lot of fantasy guys that are going to step in and be immediate contributors. Yep. So if you're into fantasy, day two is always a fun day to watch.
Lock of day two for me, Blake Corum to the Chargers at some point. So there's one of your running backs right there. Blake Corum going to the Chargers. They can still use some running back help. But yeah, I look at them at 37 as maybe the first spot a running back could go. But then you talk about Tennessee, maybe, and their situation. But I'm looking at the Giants at 47. I'm looking at the Cowboys at 56. That's kind of where I see the running backs starting to come off the board. No safeties, Andrew. No linebackers. No running backs. One defensive tackle. There's going to be some of these lower, I guess, position groups that you don't kind of view as more of the high profile ones, the ones like offensive tackle, quarterback that obviously went early. You're going to start seeing those come off the board pretty quickly on day two. The value conversation kind of goes out the window a little bit and teams just start to take guys that they like. It's going to be fun. We're going to be here for it. There might be a live show, a live stream of it, like we did for round one on the Steel Curtain Network and Fans First Sports Network. But Andrew, we're going to be back again Saturday morning with a recap of day two, and then we'll recap day three and the entire draft in the coming days after it's all over as well. That's going to do it for us here on the FFSN NFL Draft Recap Show. For Andrew Wilbar, I'm Jeremy Betts. We'll talk to you.